Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. For the past 2 weeks, the House Intelligence Committee has been holding impeachment proceedings. Today, we'll have a summary of what we've learned in those hearings, including an excerpt of Ambassador Sondland's bombshell testimony acknowledging that there was a quid pro quo and that, in his words, everybody was in on it. Those are startling statements coming from a Republican who donated over $1 million to Trump's presidential campaign before becoming an ambassador. Also hear about the verdict in the trial of Roger Stone, who was convicted of witness tampering and lying to Congress to protect the president. Here in California, the Public Utilities Commission has launched an investigation into power outages by utilities to prevent fires. And in local news, the district attorney is investigating whether Joel Anderson violated the law with excessive donations to his campaign for county supervisor. The Grossmont Union High School District has denied renewal of Steel Canyon High School's charter on grounds of undemocratic actions, and we'll have details. Santee's City Council is considering changes to public comment times during its council meetings, where residents often have to wait hours to state their views. The county is warning of tuberculosis cases in county jails. And on Crime Beat, El Cajon Police Department is asking public help to find a hit-and-run driver who killed a pedestrian and also to help solve a string of carjackings. On Destination East County, hear about some festive events coming up, including the Mother Goose Parade Sunday before Thanksgiving, where our own Paul Cruz is one of the announcers, as well as many other holiday happenings coming up. We'll also have tips on flood preparedness as we enter the winter season and some advice on how to choose a holiday tree. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The second week of impeachment hearings before the House Intelligence Committee brought drama and surprises. Perhaps the most startling testimony came from Ambassador Gordon Sondland, a Republican who donated over $1 million to Donald Trump's presidential campaign before being appointed ambassador to the European Union. He shocked Republicans by admitting in his opening statement that there was a quid pro quo, without even waiting to be asked about it, and said that everyone knew about it. His testimony directly contradicts the repeated claim by President Trump that there was no quid pro quo, a favor granted in exchange for something in return. According to Sondland and several earlier witnesses, Trump wanted Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to announce an investigation into Hunter Biden, the son of former Vice President Joe Biden, a key Trump rival in the 2020 election. Hunter Biden worked for Burisma, a Ukrainian company. Here's an excerpt of Ambassador Sondland's shocking testimony.
Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I worked with Mr. Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine matters at the express direction of the President of the United States. We did not want to work with Mr. Giuliani. Simply put, we were playing the hand we were dealt. I know that members of this committee frequently frame these complicated issues in the form of a simple question. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes. Mr. Giuliani conveyed to Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and others that President Trump wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing to investigations of Burisma and the 2016 election. Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret. Everyone was informed via email on July 19th, days before the presidential call.
Now, unlike prior witnesses whom Republican legislators attacked for hearsay evidence, Sondland had direct knowledge of the key facts and could not be disparaged for any partisan motive. Trump withheld military aid promised to the Ukraine to fight Russian military aggression, an action that put lives at stake in the Ukraine, multiple witnesses have confirmed. His action surprised and troubled senior diplomats, according to a whistleblower and now a half dozen witnesses. If done for personal or political gain, that would violate U.S. campaign finance laws and could be construed as bribery, one of two high crimes specifically mentioned in the Constitution as impeachable offenses. Ambassador Sondland also shot down Trump's contention that he was seeking a broader investigation into corruption in the Ukraine, not just an investigation of his political rival's son. Sondland told the committee members that as a condition for getting the military aid promised to the Ukraine by Congress, Trump pushed Zelensky to, quote, announce the investigations. He didn't actually have to do them, unquote. In other words, Trump wanted Zelensky to smear Biden by announcing an investigation, not actually conducting any investigation of the Bidens, let alone a deeper probe into corruption involving anybody else. Equally startling, Sondland also said he told Vice President Pence of his concern that Ukraine military aid appeared conditioned on political investigations just before Pence met with Zelensky. Pence's chief of staff, Mark Short, later denied that conversation occurred, the Washington Post reports, though his statement to the Post was not made under oath. Lawmakers also heard from three officials Tuesday who listened in on the call between Trump and Zelensky in July. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the National Security Council's top Ukraine expert, said he was shocked by how the call played out. Jennifer Williams, an aide to Vice President Pence's office, told the impeachment panel she found the call unusual and inappropriate. And Tim Morrison, then Director of Europe and Eurasia on the National Security Council, took a more measured approach, calling concern over Trump pushing for a political favor hypothetical. Laura Cooper, the top Pentagon expert on Russia and the Ukraine, testified Wednesday that Ukrainian officials asked the Defense Department on July 25th about the status of frozen military aid. On the same day, Trump and Zelensky spoke by phone. Cooper's statement cast doubt on Republican claims that the Ukraine's leader was not aware of the military freeze. Some Republicans have suggested that even if Trump did push for a Biden investigation by withholding military aid, it would not amount to extortion if Zelensky was unaware of the freeze. Attempted extortion is, however, still a crime. Fiona Hill, former director of Europe and Eurasia for the National Security Council, who left that post last summer voluntarily, delivered a strong rebuttal of a discredited conspiracy theory about Ukrainian meddling in the 2016 election, the other issue that Trump asked Zelensky to pursue. In her opening statement, Hill called that theory, quote, a fictional narrative that has been perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves. Now, the White House has prohibited some key insiders who might have provided eyewitness accounts from testifying, although National Security Advisor John Bolton has asked a court to determine whether he must follow the presidential order or not. Absent any eyewitnesses who might refute the growing evidence provided by witnesses to date, suggesting presidential abuse of power and other crimes, Republican legislators focused largely on attacking Democrats' motives. California Republican Devin Nunes accused Democrats of waging a campaign against Trump, accusing Trump of being a Russian agent, engaging in dirty tricks, and plotting impeachment from early in Trump's term before the Zelensky call. Nunes denounced what he called the tyranny of the majority, referring to House Democrats. House Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff criticized Republican colleagues for cowering rather than questioning the president's actions benefiting Russia, even when Trump stood beside Russian President Vladimir Putin and questioned his own intelligence agencies. Schiff also faulted Trump and Republican representatives for trying to smear reputations of witnesses, including nonpartisan career diplomats and even Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a Purple Heart veteran, while not disputing the facts. He noted that the Ukraine is at war with Russia and then characterized Trump's withholding aid from an ally at war as, quote, worse than anything that Nixon did, unquote, during Watergate. By seeking foreign intervention in a U.S. election a second time, Schiff said Trump also considers himself above the law, which he believes sets a dangerous precedent. Chairman Schiff asked his colleagues, what is our duty here? That's what we need to be asking.
Roger Stone, a longtime ally of President Donald Trump, has been convicted by a federal jury on all seven counts, including witness tampering and lying to Congress, to protect Trump during the House Intelligence Committee's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. The witness tampering included an overt death threat. Stone texted a message to a witness slated to appear before the House Intelligence Committee regarding Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's probe into Trump-Russia ties. The message stated, "You are a rat, a stoolie. Prepare to die." The witness, radio host Randy Credico, was Stone's intermediary to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange to obtain details on emails stolen from the Democratic National Committee that were damaging to Hillary Clinton, Trump's 2016 political rival. Stone also urged the witness via email to follow the actions of Godfather II character Frank Pentangeli, who lied to Congress to avoid incriminating mafia boss Michael Corleone. Prosecutors said Stone falsely told Congress he had no emails or text messages about talking to WikiLeaks, when in fact there were more than 1,500 such texts and emails with Credico, whom he also urged to stonewall or take the Fifth. Credico ultimately did assert his Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination and refused to testify to the House committee. Lawmakers have since said this caused them to not follow up promising leads and to reach false conclusions in their final report on Russia's 2016 election interference. Stone faces up to 50 years in federal prison. He is scheduled for sentencing on February 6. Stone is the latest of six top Trump advisors who were convicted or pled guilty of crimes resulting from Mueller's investigation. The others are former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, who is in prison for financial crimes, former national security advisor Michael Flynn, who pled guilty to lying to investigators about his contacts with Russia's ambassador, former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, who is now in prison after admitting he lied to Congress on Trump's plan to build a Trump Tower in Russia and for paying off women who claim to have had sex with Trump. Former Trump deputy campaign chairman Rick Gates, who pled guilty to lying to prosecutors, and former Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, who pled guilty to lying to investigators about his contacts with Russians. Stone's trial revealed damning evidence not only against Stone, but also evidence discrediting statements made by Donald Trump, in which Trump denied discussing hacked emails during his presidential campaign. Gates testified that he overheard Trump talking to Stone on the phone in July of 2016 after WikiLeaks began publishing DNC emails. Gates said Trump told him, "More information is coming," after Trump's call with Stone. That contradicts Trump's written statements to Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, in which Trump said he did not recall being told about discussions of the hacked emails. Gates cooperated with prosecutors in exchange for a reduced sentence and pled guilty to lying to investigators. Steve Bannon, former White House chief strategist, was also a witness for the prosecution against Stone. Stone did not testify, and his defense team did not call a single witness on his behalf. Instead, his defense lawyers claimed no collusion with Russia. His attorney told jurors that if his efforts to illegally obtain information from WikiLeaks to damage Clinton were true, it didn't matter. Stone's defense team also claimed his threatening messages to a witness were crude, but not malignant. But Assistant U.S. Attorney Michael Mirando told jurors, "Truth matters," a fact which resonated with the jury, which issued a unanimous verdict. Stone has a long history as a political operative engaged in shady dealings, dating back to alleged dirty tricks for the campaign of Richard Nixon, who later resigned the presidency under threat of impeachment for covering up knowledge of the Watergate break-ins. Trump reacted to the guilty verdicts against Stone by showing no concern over the actions of Stone, instead attacking prosecutors and accusing Mueller of lying. He also bemoaned lack of prosecution of, quote, "crooked Hillary, Comey, and others," as a, quote, "a double standard like never seen before in the history of our country." The verdict comes as impeachment hearings are underway in the House of Representatives, looking at whether President Trump withheld military aid to the Ukraine in an effort to pressure or bribe to investigate Hunter Biden, the son of Trump's 2020 campaign rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. Hunter Biden was a consultant for a Ukrainian company, and the Ukraine's prosecutor has previously said he found no evidence of the corruption involving Biden. Senator Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Senate Democrat, said the jury's decision on Stone sends a powerful and timely message to President Trump and all House and Senate witnesses, past, present, and future, that lying to Congress, witness tampering, and obstruction of Congress are crimes, and those who commit crimes do so at their own peril. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across our border region.
The California Public Utilities Commission has opened an investigation to examine recent public safety power shutoffs and hold utilities accountable for their actions. The electric utilities under investigation include SDG&E locally as well as PG&E, Edison, and others. In September and October of this year, the companies proactively shut down power lines during high wildfire danger weather conditions to reduce the risk of utility infrastructure starting fires. The PUC's investigation will assess whether the investor-owned utilities properly balance the need to provide safe and reliable service when executing their recent power shutoffs to protect themselves from liability. The outages, which affected millions of Californians, have prompted many complaints from ratepayers who suffered inconvenience, financial losses, and vulnerability to potential harm. The results of the investigation will be presented in a public report. The review will also help the PUC determine if changes to de-energization regulations are needed to ensure public safety. If any utilities are found in violation of current regulations, enforcement action may be taken. Commissioner Genevieve Shiroma, who was appointed to the PUC by Governor Gavin Newsom, says it is important for the PUC to determine if the utilities complied with using public safety power shutoffs as a last resort and to collect the knowledge gained toward any revisions needed for next year. She adds, it is essential that our protocols and the utilities' practices provide the best service and protections for customers in the face of wildfires. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County of San Diego's Registrar of Voters has asked the District Attorney's Office to investigate allegations of criminal campaign finance violations by Joel Anderson's campaign for county supervisor. County spokesman Michael Workman told the Union Tribune earlier this month. Anderson, a former state senator and assembly member, is running for the seat held by Supervisor Diane Jacob, who must retire due to term limits after over 25 years in office. Anderson first announced his intention to run for supervisor in 2016, raising large sums through two campaign committees, including some donations over the county's limit of $850 per person. He later decided not to run in 2016 and started a new committee for the 2020 race, but transferred nearly $273,000 from the 2016 campaign coffers to the new committee. He then raised thousands of dollars in donations from some of the very same contributors who had maxed out on donations to his 2016 campaign. Anderson now claims on his state campaign reports that he organized his 2020 supervisorial race starting in December 2014, raking in donations from East County business interests, ignoring the fact that he publicly announced his run for 2016 before changing his mind. The key question is whether or not it is legal to move that money into his 2020 campaign account and raise more funds from the same people who gave the max before. Anderson's campaign manager did not respond to our request for comments. However, his campaign manager, Andrew Hayes, called the inquiry a bogus attack, according to the Union Tribune. Hayes gave the newspaper a letter from attorney James Lacey, who voiced this opinion to Anderson's campaign. Since this is a separate election, and as provided for by the county law, you may carry over the 2016 funds that you have from a separate election with no impact at all on the individual contribution limits for the separate 2020 election. Anderson's campaign has suggested the county complaint is politically motivated. Supervisor Jacob has endorsed Poway Mayor Steve Voss, who is running against Anderson in the 2020 supervisor race. Kenya Taylor, the Democratic Party's endorsed candidate, with a background in behavioral health and community activism, is also in the race. Jacob issued a statement on Anderson's donations, which says, Mr. Anderson has a history of either bending or breaking contribution rules. This doesn't pass the smell test, and it should be determined if it passes the legal test. The Union Tribune spoke with two campaign finance experts who agreed with Jacob that Anderson's actions likely violated the law. Ray Lopez Calderon, executive director of Common Cause in California, notes that the local law says that nobody can accept, solicit, or give above the limit to donate in any way that would cause the limits to be exceeded with respect to a single election. Adding, if this were legal, what he's doing, then anyone could do this each year until they have a huge amount of money. Election attorney James Sutton in San Francisco says while candidates are allowed to carry over funds from one election to another for the same office, that isn't what Anderson did. Since he claims he began his 2020 race in 2014, that means that some donors maxed out on the 2020 race 5 years ago. Accepting donations from the same donors in 2020 appears to be double-dipping, over-the-limit contributions that violate the most basic campaign finance law, according to Sutton. This isn't the first time Anderson has been accused of serious campaign finance violations. He was fined $20,000 by California's Fair Political Practices Commission and returned over $100,000 in donations to his 2010 Assembly Campaign Committee after the FPPC investigated and found serious violations. There are some strong similarities. In that case, the FPPC found that several major donors who had already given Anderson's campaign the maximum allowed by state law made hefty donations to a Republican Central Committee in Fresno, which funneled the money into Anderson's campaign. Those donors included Hammond Companies and members of the Hammond family, as well as Sempra Energy, parent corporation of SDG&E, and the Barona tribe. Hammond, an East County construction company that leased space to Anderson for his offices and also has interests in industrial solar projects, gave a whopping $30,000 to the Fresno Republican Central Committee that wound up in Anderson's campaign coffers. Anderson's opponent at the time, Jeff Stone, a Riverside County supervisor, called the action money laundering. Anderson has bristled at that term. In a May 2010 interview with East County Magazine, Anderson insisted the excess contributions were, quote, flat-out mistakes made by staff during a campaign that took in over $500,000. There was no money laundering, he said, noting he had endorsements from police and sheriff deputy organizations. Do you think they would endorse me if I were a money launderer? The 2010 donations in question were never spent, and Anderson said the money was returned to donors as quickly as possible after he became aware of the violations. Although he paid the $20,000 in state fines, he did not admit wrongdoing. A key question is whether any of his big donors received improper favors. Anderson refused to take a stand against many major energy projects proposed or built in East County, despite being urged by many citizens to do so. He had taken substantial donations from Sempra Energy, owner of SDG&E, which stood to profit off the projects. On most, he remained neutral, including Sunrise Powerlink high voltage lines, Thule Wind in McCain Valley, and the Quail Brush gas-fired plant proposed near Mission Trails. The latter drew opposition from Santee's Republican mayor, Randy Vopel, as well as San Diego's Democratic mayor, Bob Filner. When asked at the time why he didn't take a stand, Anderson said these were not state issues, and thus, as a state legislator, he opted to remain neutral. However, he took an active stance in favor of one project, Soytec Solar's proposed industrial solar projects in McCain Valley, on land owned by Hammond Companies. He even sent a letter to county supervisors, lobbying them to vote in favor of the Soytec projects, which were narrowly approved by a single vote before Soytec later withdrew from the solar business and sold its interests. Hammond leased office space to Anderson for his local legislative headquarters at the time, in addition to giving him donations far over the legal limits. Anderson through the years has declined to answer questions about his ties to special interests. His office even banned a constituent who posed tough questions. In 2015, when Anderson was a state senator and was first campaigning for supervisor, constituent Thomas Biggers, who said he previously voted for Anderson, became concerned about Anderson's special interest ties. Biggers sent Senator Anderson these four questions. Why would you run for county supervisor and take the job from Diane Jacob when you are both Republicans? Why are you for the solar project in McCain Valley when most of the people in the East County are not for it? Why is your office right above the office of the company who are trying to put in the solar project in McCain Valley? Why are you taking campaign contributions from them? In response, Anderson's district representative, Joseline Cuesta, sent Biggers a terse reply accusing him of bribery, when Biggers had merely questioned Anderson's reasons for actions that favored a major donor. Cuesta insisted that Senator Anderson works to uphold the highest ethical standards for his office and cannot be bought. He then told Biggers in writing, if you contact our office in the future, we will not respond. Biggers expressed shock at the response and said the treatment he received by the senator's office made him feel as if I lost my citizenship. We contacted Anderson's office to request comments for an article and radio interview with Biggers back then, but neither Anderson nor his staff replied. Anderson's ties to special interests have been substantial through the years, beyond his major donors. While in the legislature, Anderson was the California representative for the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. He was named ALEC's Legislator of the Year in 2011. ALEC is financed by major corporations, primarily the oil industry, pharmaceutical, and tobacco companies. ALEC asks its legislative representatives to introduce model legislation benefiting its corporate backers, which also include the insurance industry. Some of ALEC's priorities have included privatizing public education, denying climate change, and promoting free market, pro-business doctrines. The group became so controversial that public pressure led to several major corporations canceling membership in ALEC, including Microsoft, General Motors, Coke, Procter & Gamble, and Bank of America. Anderson refused to respond to inquiries from our media outlet and others at the time on his ties to ALEC and other corporate and special interests. He also refused to fill out Project Vote Smart's political courage test, which measures each candidate's willingness to provide citizens with their positions on key issues. His score on that political courage test was zero. The Valley Roadrunner, in Valley Center, in an article titled, "Where in the World is State Senator Joel Anderson?" noted that Anderson was absent on the opening day of the 2015 legislative session in Sacramento. The Roadrunner reported that Anderson was meeting with a lobbyist from the insurance company GEICO, a major past campaign donor, over a lobster luncheon. Eddie Kurtz, executive director of Courage Campaign, a nonpartisan organization, criticized the senator, stating, "Senator Anderson should explain what he talked about during that lunch and what promises were made." Last year, Anderson was reprimanded by the legislature after an independent investigation found that during a political fundraiser near the Capitol, he told a female lobbyist he wanted to slap her, CalMatters reported. Anderson has claimed his meaning was misunderstood, but the lobbyist and four witnesses confirmed the incident, with some indicating Anderson used the term bitch slap after drinking. He subsequently ran for State Board of Equalization in November 2018 and was defeated by Mike Schaefer, a Democrat who was not endorsed by the Democratic Party due to scandals including fraud, which led to Schaefer's disbarment from practicing law in two states. Anderson has long positioned himself as a tax fighter. He won awards from groups such as the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, American Legion, and California Small Business Association, and among others. His legislative record included authoring a bill to divest California pensions from companies doing business with Iran, and co-authoring various bills to protect privacy and public safety. Project Vote Smart lists a summary of political ratings. They ranged from 0% ratings from the Sierra Club, California Clean Money Action, and the California Federation of Teachers, to 100% by the California Chamber of Commerce and the American Conservative Union. His endorsements include the San Diego County Republican Party, as well as former Governor Pete Wilson, indicted Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, among other former and current elected officials. On his campaign website, Anderson states his priorities of elected supervisor would be to provide effective, efficient, and accountable government. But so far, Anderson has not taken accountability for his actions that benefited special interests, even when those interests conflicted with the interests of his constituents. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Grossmont Union High School District's Board of Directors has refused to renew the charter application for Steel Canyon High School unless changes are made. The action came after two Steel Canyon governing board members alleged that the Steel Canyon board majority and the school's charter committee acted illegally and undemocratically. The charter high school in Spring Valley landed in hot water with the district and parents after newly elected board member Mark Roback discovered significant discrepancies between old and new bylaws, including a provision that would allow the board majority to kick off a board member without cause. He also objected to the board failing to provide members with redlined copies showing all of the proposed changes in the lengthy bylaws and charter. In addition, Roback noted that the school's charter committee, which proposed these changes, lacked any representation of parents. Steel Canyon's board convened a special meeting on November 6th, knowing that Roback could not attend due to his duties as an Otay Water board member. The Steel Canyon board voted 6-1 to approve the new bylaws and charter, with Roback absent and Vice Chair Tim Abbott opposed. Steel Canyon's governing board chair and principal, Scott Parr, defended the actions in testimony to the Grossmont District's board last week. Parr claimed the changes were recommended by the school's legal team to meet new corporate code. But a school is not a corporation, and Steel Canyon's governing board members are elected officials. Grossmont's trustees grilled Parr intensively. Trustee Jim Kelly voiced frustration with Parr's repeated dodging of his questions, stating, "I am not getting a straight answer from you." Kelly then suggested the real motive for making it easy to oust an elected board member may be to, quote, "eliminate anyone that may have a dissenting opinion," unquote. Kelly called that horribly undemocratic, adding that in his 27 years on the board, he'd never heard of any school board allowing board members to vote off a member who was elected by parents. As for Roback's allegations that he learned of the changes at the last minute without a redlined copy showing the changes, Kelly told Parr, "It seems to me that this is something you and your people are trying to sneak past either one of your board members and maybe sneak through our district." He called Steel Canyon's actions bad faith and very suspicious. Dr. Gary Woods and Robert Shield voiced similar objections. The Grossmont District Board then requested that Parr provide a complete redlined version of the application for renewal for reconsideration at a future meeting. After the meeting, Roback told our reporter that, unlike in a corporate setting, all of the school's money comes from the parents as taxpayers. Shame on them, he said, of Steel Canyon's board majority and charter committee for what he called undemocratic actions, and he pledged, "I will not give up." Stacy Achenbach, chair of the school's governing board who pushed for the changes, refused to provide a statement when asked by East County Magazine to respond to parents' concerns. The next step is for the charter school's board to address the issues raised by Roback and Abbott over the charter committee and bylaws, and then resubmit the application to the Grossmont district. If the application is denied, Steel Canyon could appeal the district's decision with the County Board of Education and state. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Public speakers at Santee City Council meetings often have to sit for more than 3 hours before they can state their beefs in public comments. But at a workshop held on November 13th, the council discussed several possible changes, including moving public comments earlier and shortening the length of its meetings, as well as changing how the city chooses its vice mayor. The council will vote on changes at its December 11th meeting. During the discussion, several council members voiced their strong support for an earlier starting time for council meetings that now begin at 7 p.m. and setting a curfew to end meetings by 11 p.m. In recent months, several council meetings have run past 11 p.m., some approaching the next day. Vice Mayor Stephen Houlihan called setting a curfew a great idea and going past 11 p.m. ridiculous. Councilman Ron Hall agreed. He suggested the start time be moved to 6:30 p.m. Councilwoman Laura Koval also liked the idea of a 6:30 start, referring to a list of many other California cities that hold their meetings at 6 p.m. But Councilman Rob McNellis opposed the 11 o'clock curfew. "This is what we're supposed to do," he said, "of handling all business before the council. If a meeting runs late," he added, "then it's our fault." But he did voice support for an earlier start time at 6 p.m. Only Mayor Minto said he was fine with the start time and long meetings because I'm retired, the former police officer explained. But he agreed to back a curfew if others want one. The selection of vice mayor also generated lots of comments from members. The majority agree with changing to a rotating system based on what district each council member represents, instead of the current system, which gives the vice mayor job to the highest vote getter in the last election. Most council members supported the rotation method by district, as long as the member has served for at least 1 year. Moving up public comments for non-agenda items at council meetings also generated plenty of discussion, with Houlihan advocating to moving public comments to near the beginning of meetings. Making people wait till nearly 11 p.m. to make their statements isn't fair, he said. Both Hall and McNellis want to keep the public comment section where it is, after new business and before council reports, which means at least a 2-hour and often 3-hour delay. A survey of California cities found many have public comment periods near the start of meetings, including all other East County city councils in El Cajon, La Mesa, and Lemon Grove, as well as San Diego County supervisors. But it's unclear if Santee's city council will put the needs of its citizens first to encourage residents to speak out or discourage participation by keeping public comments late at night. The council did agree to keep its 3-minute limit for public speakers and 15-minute limit for group presentations. The council voted on one item, providing a raise to city manager Marlene Best of $20,000 up front and another $20,000 paid over 26 monthly installments starting in 2021. This will put her annual salary with benefits at over $300,000. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. If you've visited any San Diego County jails lately or a homeless shelter, you may have been exposed to tuberculosis. 3 unrelated cases of TB have recently been diagnosed locally, according to county health officials. At the San Diego Central Jail Detention Facility, the exposure period was from August 20th to September 6th. At the George Bailey Detention Facility, exposure was from September 6th through September 15th. And at the Las Colinas Detention Facility in Santee, the exposure time frame was from October 16th through 18th. A person from out of town who spent time at a bridge shelter on Newton Avenue in San Diego that serves the homeless also had TB and may have exposed people there between August 20th and September 9th. That person, who also had other medical issues, has since passed away. TB is transmitted from person to person through indoor air during prolonged contact with an infectious individual. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer, says testing is recommended for people who were exposed to assure they're not infected, since initially infection usually has no symptoms. For any infected individuals, early diagnosis and prompt treatment can prevent the infectious form of the disease, she says. Symptoms of active TB disease include persistent cough, fever, night sweats, and unexplained weight loss. For people with symptoms of TB, or those with compromised immune systems who may not show symptoms, it is important that the person see their medical provider to rule out TB, which can be treated and cured with antibiotics. The number of annual TB cases in San Diego County has decreased since the early 90s and stabilized in recent years. There were 237 cases reported in 2017, and last year, 226 cases. So far this year, 179 cases have been reported. If you would like more information on this potential exposure, you can call the San Diego County TB Control Program at 619-692-8621, or for the jail exposures, the Sheriff's Department Infection Control at 858-974-8621. 5971.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
El Cajon Police Department is asking the public's help to find a silver 4-door sedan that struck and killed a 58-year-old man who was crossing the intersection of East Chase and Lincoln Avenue on November 6th at 6:24 p.m. The driver fled the scene. The vehicle may have damage to the bumper, hood, and windshield. A passerby started CPR on the unresponsive victim, who was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital via ambulance, where he was pronounced dead. If you have information on this fatal accident, please call Officer Venegas at 619-441-5521. If you would like to remain anonymous, you can contact Crime Stoppers at sdcrimestoppers.org or 888-580-8477. El Cajon has had many deadly pedestrian accidents in recent years. The El Cajon Police Department would also like to remind those who walk at night to obey all traffic control devices, only cross the street at designated controlled intersections, and wear bright or light-colored clothing for visibility. For those driving vehicles during hours of darkness, please pay extra attention to the roadway and be aware of pedestrians who may be crossing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Jonathan Goetz. El Cajon police seek public help to solve a string of carjackings and robberies. On November 13th, between 5 and 6 a.m., a band of 4 or 5 young men in their teens or 20s, wearing masks and armed with handguns and long guns, carjacked multiple passenger vehicles. They also robbed a bystander on a sidewalk of his backpack. In one incident, a couple confronted a suspect in their parked car and a struggle ensued. The man was struck with a gun, and the woman, who clung to her vehicle, was dragged a short distance when the suspect drove off and fled the scene. Both suffered minor injuries, and the woman was taken to a hospital, says Lieutenant Randy Sillard. Streets where these crimes occurred included Naranja, Grant, Filbert, and the intersection of Lexington and Gina. Anyone with information regarding these incidents or suspects involved are encouraged to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311 or San Diego Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 or online at sdcrimestoppers.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Goetz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features the Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon and a Thanksgiving feast at a historic lodge in Julian.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including concerts at the Magnolia in El Cajon, North Pole Limited Holiday Train Rides in Campo, Pomegranate Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, a Julian Country Christmas, Brotherhood of Man's Dance Program in La Mesa, Lakeside Spirit of Christmas on Main, Ramona's Holiday Tree Lighting, a European Christmas Market and Caroling atop Mount Helix, Santa at Santee Lakes, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, and a Paris Holiday Tea in El Cajon to benefit local arts organizations.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Mother Goose Parade has been delighting children and families for 73 years. This year, the parade will roll out through downtown El Cajon on Sunday, November 24th, starting at 1 p.m. The parade features an array of floats, marching bands, equestrians, clowns, local celebrities, and Santa Claus to welcome the start of the holiday season in East County. You can find the route and details at mothergooseparade.org.
The historic Pine Hills Lodge in Julian will be serving up a 10-course traditional feast on Thanksgiving Day, November 28th. The lodge was built in 1912 as a romantic mountain hideaway by Colonel Ed Fletcher, a prominent San Diego developer, and designed by world-famous architect Richard Requois, known for many of the structures in Balboa Park. The bark on wood log construction is considered irreplaceable. In 1925, the lodge sold to Sutherland Stage and Yellow Cab Company owner, who built a gym at the lodge and invited his friend, famous boxer Jack Dempsey, to train there. The lodge has undergone renovations in recent years. Reservations are required for the Thanksgiving feast at Pine Hills Lodge, where you may even see wild turkeys in the woods. Seatings are available at 11 a.m., 1:30, and 4 p.m. To feast your eyes on the menu and make reservations, you can visit pinehillslodge.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next month. Upcoming performances include The World of Dance Live, the Danish heavy metal band King Diamond, Straight Up with Stassi Live, a 50-year tribute to the Beatles' White Album, Which One's Pink, a Pink Floyd tribute band, and Dave Koz and Friends' Gifts of the Season Christmas Tour. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The North Pole Limited, a special holiday train ride, will run Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays between Thanksgiving and Christmas at the Pacific Southwest Railroad Museum and Park in Campo. Santa's elves will sing favorite Christmas carols, read a popular Christmas story to young ones, and pass out cookies as well as hot chocolate to all passengers. The North Pole Limited will stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus, who will visit with all passengers on the vintage train on the way back to the lighted Campo Depot. Advance tickets are recommended and can be purchased at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
What began as a fall treat for the camel herd at Oasis Camel Dairy has become the venue's most beloved event. This year, on November 29th, November 30th, and December 1st, Pomegranate Days celebrates its 9th year with much more than the traditional camel feeding, camel show, and camel rides. Guests can also savor pomegranates for sale from the family's farm's orchard. A comedy magic performance by Godfrey the Magician with his magic castle, and just in time for Thanksgiving weekend, a turkey stampede by pardoned gobblers from the award-winning State Fair Traveling Turkey Race Show. You can also meet Christine Adams, the author of Camel Crazy, which chronicles tales of camels such as Camelot, Goldie, and Cleopatra at the Oasis Camel Dairy. Amina and Fergie, two camel babies, will be on hand for guests seeking selfies with camels. Plus, guests can enjoy a singing bird show and more. Find tickets and details at cameldairy.com.
Julian's Country Christmas Celebration will be held on November 30th from 1 to 7 p.m., with lighting of the town's huge living Christmas tree and the arrival of Santa Claus between 5:30 and 6 p.m. at Pioneer Park, and that's in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. Visitors can also enjoy shopping at boutique shops and craft stores for one-of-a-kind gifts this annual event, hosted by the Julian Chamber of Commerce. You can find details on the event in Julian and more at visitjulian.com in the calendar section.
Visionary Dance Theater will present Brotherhood of Man at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa on December 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. Directed by Spencer John Powell and choreographed by the studio's male dancers, Brotherhood of Man is themed on the diversity of the male experience. Each dancer presents a positive male role model going through the experiences and the struggles of life. Tickets are available at visionarydancetheater.org. That's THEATRE.org, Visionary Dance Theater.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce invites you to celebrate at its 21st annual Spirit of Christmas on Main Avenue on Saturday, December 7th, from 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. Santa and his elves are hard at work creating an atmosphere of an old-fashioned hometown Christmas featuring local school performances of holiday favorites, photos with Santa, food and drinks, children's activities, jumpy jumps, crafters booths, and lighting of a community Christmas tree. Find details at lakesidechamber.com.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce hosts the 27th annual Christmas tree lighting on Saturday, December 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Old Town Ramona will come alive with over 1,000 Ramona residents out to celebrate the holiday season. Shops will be open late, and Main Street between 6th and 8th Streets will be closed to traffic. There will be sleigh rides, a classic car and motorcycle display, music, dancing, carolers, and of course, Santa. The lighting of the tree in front of the Guy B. Woodward Museum will take place at 6 p.m. Find more information at ramonachamber.com.
This year's 29th annual Christmas on Mount Helix on Saturday, December 7th, is expanding to feature European Christmas markets with local artisans from 2 to 5 p.m., followed by a family caroling sing-along from 5 to 6 p.m. and a reading of the Nativity story from 6 to 7. Parking is available at Grossmont High School with a shuttle ride to the top of Mount Helix for the festivities. For more information, you can visit mounthelixpark.org, and that's mthelixpark.org.
Santee Lakes invites you to join Santa at the Lakes on Sunday, December 8th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The festivities will feature a snow hill, carnival rides, inflatable jumps, crafts, food, character meets and greets, and Santa Claus. Get more information at santeelakes.com.
The La Mesa Village Association's Holiday in the Village returns to downtown La Mesa December 13th and 14th. This family-friendly event will feature a wonderland of festive holiday music and dance, food, kids' activities, live entertainment, merchants staying open late for holiday shopping, and more. Look for details at lamesavillageassociation.org.
Friends of East County Arts cordially invites you to a Paris Holiday Tea on Saturday, December 14th at 11 a.m. at Holy Trinity Parish Hall in El Cajon. Guests are encouraged to don a fancy hat to enjoy champagne, tea, scones, and desserts on fine holiday tableware. There will also be door prize and opportunity drawings, plus entertainment, including a performance by the Valhalla High School Dance Program, one of the recipients of this year's grants.
The nonprofit Friends of East County Arts has donated over $875,000 through the years to local schools and community organizations, including over $30,000 this year, all to support performing arts and fine arts in East County. For tickets and more information, you can visit friendsofecarts.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
With the first winter storm moving across our region, dropping heavy rainfall, it's important to take steps to protect your property. Only a few inches of water can cause major damage to your home or business and its contents. The county is providing no-cost sandbags at many fire stations in unincorporated parts of the county. Cities in our region also have sandbags available. You can get a list of all the locations offering sandbags in our region at readysandiego.org/flooding. The site also has a list of retail stores selling sand and bags in case fire stations near you run out, or it's more convenient to stop by a retailer near you, such as Home Depot or Dixie Line Lumber. ReadySanDiego.org/flooding also has links to other resources, such as a map where you can check flood risk for your area. Check your insurance policy to see if you have coverage for flooding caused by rainfall. If you live in an area with a significant risk of flooding and can't get coverage through your homeowner's insurance policy, you may qualify for the National Flood Insurance Program. During flash flood conditions, waters can rise quickly. Never try to cross a flooded road, since even a small amount of fast-moving water can quickly carry off or capsize a vehicle. To help keep others safe, be sure to report any hazards you may observe, such as potholes, sinkholes, rock or mudslides, flooded roads, fallen trees, or downed power lines to the appropriate agencies. Road damage should be reported to the County Public Works Office or the city where you live. For downed power lines, notify SDG&E. For emergencies that pose an immediate threat to lives, call 911. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world. This is Gene Carpenter with a People Power Report. You're invited to make a difference this holiday season for children of military personnel living in military housing in La Mesa. The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce is hosting a toy drive for the children ages 2 through 13 on Wednesday, December 4th at BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Grossmont Center at 5:30 p.m. Mary England, President and CEO of the La Mesa Chamber, says the Chamber is honored to be a part of this endeavor and making a difference in the lives of these children and their families that do so much for our country. Guests are encouraged to bring a new unwrapped toy to the event. Tickets are available at the La Mesa Chamber's website. If you can't attend but would like to donate, gifts including toys and diapers may be dropped off at the La Mesa Chamber's office weekdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
If you're purchasing an artificial holiday tree, look for the label Fire Resistant. When purchasing a live tree, be sure to check for freshness. When setting up the tree at home, keep it away from fireplaces and radiators. Heated rooms dry live trees out rapidly, so be sure to keep the stand filled with water and use only lights that have been tested for safety by a recognized testing laboratory. Check each set of lights, new and old, for broken or cracked sockets, frayed or bare wires, and throw out any damaged sets. Replace burned out bulbs promptly with the same wattage. Use no more than 3 standard size sets of lights for each single extension cord. Don't use electric lights on a metallic tree. The tree can become charged with electricity from faulty lights, and a person touching a branch could actually be electrocuted. Turn off all lights when you go to bed or leave the house. The lights could short out and start a fire. Never use lighted candles on a tree in homes with small children. Take special care to avoid sharp or breakable decorations. Keep ornaments with small removable parts out of the reach of children or pets. And don't use tree preservatives if you have pets or small children, because drinking the water could be toxic. Happy holidays and stay safe.
County supervisors have approved funding for 4 satellite voting locations for the March 2020 primary election. Traditional polling places will remain in place, but the satellite voting locations will act as offshoots of the registrar's office. They will open 3 days before Election Day and be staffed by registrar employees. Potential locations for the 4 satellite sites are in San Marcos, Carmel Mountain Ranch, Spring Valley, and Chula Vista. The move came after passage of State Senate Bill 72, which requires the registrar to allow conditional voter registration at every polling place starting with the March 3rd election. That means that anyone who wants to register to vote, re-register to vote after an address change, or change their party preference to vote for a presidential candidate can do so on Election Day. During the last election, conditional voter registration was allowed only at the registrar's office, creating long waits for people. To avoid long lines at the polls at the registrar's office in March, conditional voter registration voters have the option to visit one of the satellite voting locations. Registrar staff will have electronic access to the voter rolls to process registrations quickly and give voters their ballots. Those who go to the polls on Election Day to register and vote, by contrast, will have to vote provisionally. Provisional ballots take longer to process because registrar staff must check whether the voters are registered, if they are eligible to vote in the races they marked on their ballots, and to be sure they did not vote twice. Registrar of Voters Michael Vu says that now is the time to register. Check your registration, or re-register if you need to. Don't wait until Election Day unless you absolutely must. Also understand the rules for voting in party primaries. The Republican Party requires that a voter be registered in that party in order to vote in the Republican primary. While the Democratic Party does not require registration as a Democrat to vote in their party's primary, voters who decline to state party affiliation on their registration form must request a Democratic ballot in advance if they are voting by mail. For more information on voting rules for these or other parties, check with the Registrar of Voters at www.sdvote.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.